the little photo here, too.
Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. Sorry for the delay. We are going to meet until 11, and then we will recess for session, and then we will reconvene 15 minutes after session adjourns. One of the bills on the agenda we have to has to actually maybe more than one has to be processed through session anyway for us to consider. So we're going to need to reconvene after session. First, we'll take up the Senate File 1312 first. We've got, there were, pursuant to the discussion yesterday, there were a variety of kind of suggestions for the working document. So what I thought we could do is maybe have council, if you're ready.
We don't even have it.
Oh, you don't have it.
I'm ready.
Oh, are we still waiting for copies?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go bring up as much as we can.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman, you said there is a bill that has to be processed, so maybe you should take that one up. It has to go to the floor?
It's coming the other way.
Today?
It's coming from the floor.
Here we are. No, a bill that was passed out of committee, another committee yesterday, and referred to us has to go through session.
It's not one of ours that needs to go to the floor to get
correct.
To another committee.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So we'll have the delete all passed out in a moment.
You better get him here. Excuse me. Oh, gosh, that's pretty heavy. That's really hot off the press.
Yeah, I know. It's cold in here, I feel like.
Do members have it?
Yeah.
What I thought council could do is just based on the discussions we had and the suggestions for tweaks, I thought if we could, to the best of your ability, Ms. Baker, if you could go through what you've changed.
Okay,
from yesterday.
And Mr. Chair, we Mr. Knopf and I split up the work so that he knows everything in his articles and I know everything in my articles. So I'll do my articles and then I'm sure he'll be here. There was no changes in Article 1. Article 2 was the OHV.
Articles aren't there.
And picked up just a couple of minor edits that had been made in another committee on Senator Fredrickson's OHV bill that were just technical. Let's see. I believe.
Going through this.
Just, yeah, picking up a technical correction in two places. The other one in the state forest traditional areas, that would be on page 13. No, 14, I'm sorry. 14, line 4. I added that the restrictions, and these are the restrictions on vehicle riding that would apply in the state forest traditional areas. We cross-reference the 84.926 subdivision 1, which allows the DNR to make exceptions on a case-by-case basis if I think the issue was disabilities and if they needed to use something to enjoy the area, they look at it case-by-case basis. So this just makes that clear they have that.
I still have some issues with yours.
On in Article 5, the wetlands conservation.
What page is that?
I'm looking.
She's turning to it.
56.
Well, it's like the last. Oh, okay, page 66, actually.
Okay. 56 is what she's looking at.
And it's Section 13 rulemaking. There seemed to be a little bit of issue on whether this was narrowed enough to give Bowser the direction that the committee wanted to give them, and which was to amend the rules to reflect whatever changes are enacted in the statutes that we're passing. And so we put on line 24. And Senator Fredrickson suggested this change, and Bowser was fine with it. The changes to the rules. Wait a minute. Let me start at the beginning. Within 90 days of the effective date of this section, Bowser shall adopt rules that amend Chapter 8420 to incorporate into the rules changes enacted in Minnesota statutes. The changes to the rules must address the relevant wetland exemption provisions and wetland replacement and banking provisions. And the other issue that came up was whether they should be exempted from Chapter 14. And from what I understand, the reasoning behind that is because this will allow them to very quickly get something out to local governments that makes it clear what they're supposed to do. Because if this passes, then the rules are going to be different than the statute, and they will have to figure out how to apply them both or what changes. And so technically, Bowser thinks this would make it a lot easier for them during the first 3 months to at least get it out there and then almost simultaneously start rule making under Chapter 14, because they would have to do that within 2 years, or have them adopted by 2 years, or these temporary ones would evaporate. And so they will go through the process of all of the public input and all of the open process that people were concerned about. And this is why we put that in there.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Sarles.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is somewhat of improvement, but I don't think it totally addresses the concern that I expressed yesterday, and that is the first sentence that allows them to, commands them essentially, shall adopt rules to incorporate into the rules changes enacted in Minnesota statutes. I think that the next sentence is not clear that it's limited to that. The changes to the rules must address, and I would suggest an insert at that point of that it must address the statutory changes to relevant wetland exemption provisions in the rules and wetland replacement and banking provisions.
Could you mention again?
If you're going to bypass the Chapter 14, I think that it should be very narrowly constrained to things that you are in fact changing by law, so that the rules reflect that. And that second sentence to me is not tightly connected to the first statement.
Council indicates that's a fair suggestion. Here's what I want to do before we get into too much discussion. What I'd like to do is just let council explain to us what is changed in this document from yesterday based on our discussions, and then we'll get into the discussions.
Which lines are changed?
Did you have more?
No. Mr. Chair, that completes the articles that I could change this to.
Mr. Knopf, just kind of to the best of your ability, if you could tell us what is different from what you worked on. Some chairs.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
yesterday.
I'm sorry, I was out of the room. Did you go over the change on page 2?
No.
Okay. The off-highway vehicle safety.
You're right.
What's in there now is the way the Senate passed the provision. What was in there yesterday was different from that. But this is the off-highway vehicle safety and conservation program is now the same way that it passed the Senate in Senate File 2096 in the budget bill.
Okay.
So that's one change.
Mr. Bell.
I went through Article 2 and Article 5. So.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, in Article 3, there's only one. There's one little change. It was actually page 20. This reflects an amendment that was adopted by the committee that was not picked up in the version that you saw yesterday, and it deals with the license year for the non-resident or for the fish house and fishing season, where it'll still start on March 1st, but it'll end 2 months after the normal season does now. And that was an amendment that was adopted in this committee before the bill was laid on the table, and I didn't pick that up in the first version.
Okay.
The other changes, let's see, there was no other changes to Article 3, none to Article 2, or excuse me, Article 4. And then in Article 6, you'll see some additional language in there. And I talked to Mr. Chairman, we talked about the Marty bill dealing with, and you'll see it in Article 6, it starts on page... it starts on
70?
Page 70, right. And that's, though there are provisions from Senate File 1085, and one of the reasons it couldn't be included yesterday was because there wasn't an engrossed version. It had gone through the Jobs Committee the other day. And what this does is reflect those changes. So it's basically the second engrossment now of that bill is included, and you can see the changes. The bill did go through this committee, went over to the Jobs Committee, and then I think it's on its way to the floor right now. But this is the version that left that committee. So it's Section 4 of that bill, and then it's also Section 5. Yeah. And no, not 5, I'm sorry. Section 4, Section 6, and then 7 through Section 9, no, Section 20. Are all related to the Marty bill, Senate File 1085, and actually Section 21 too, Senate File 1085, and it's the same way the bill is engrossed right now, the second engrossment. So that's.
Are there any major? Are there any substantive changes to the Marty bill since we passed it?
More technical kind of changes. The one kind of substantive change was on the pharmaceuticals, on page 75. Before it applied to humans or animals, and the or animals was removed. And apparently there's an issue with vaccines that are given to animals that are sold over the counter, and there was some concern about prohibiting that because it does, they do contain mercury. And so that was changed. Otherwise, as far as I know, the changes were generally technical, and I wasn't involved in that committee. So, as I understand it, the rest of them were fairly technical.
But that change, substantive change is not in addition to what we passed.
It took away something.
Nothing new.
Substantively.
All right.
And then it also includes the changes in the ditch buffer provisions that were adopted by the Agriculture Committee yesterday, it used to say preference shall be given for kind of that local ecotype, and the Ag Committee removed that yesterday. So this now reflects Senate File 642 as it passed the Ag Committee yesterday. The drainage provisions and
what
article.
What page is that on?
It starts on page 87. And in two places, there was a provision in there that was added in this committee to say that the preference shall be given to local ecotype, and that was removed in the Ag Committee yesterday. So this reflects that change from the Ag Committee to get it to. So basically, now Article 8. In fact, they also stripped out the appropriations. So now Article 8 reads exactly as Senate File 642 will read. It's going to the floor.
Um, that all you had?
That's it, Mr. Chairman.
I'm pretty sure there were just technical changes to some of our provisions in the State and Local Government Committee last night.
Right.
And so I don't know if you've had a chance to look at those, but I think that's something we'll have to,
right. Mr.
We'll
Chairman,
have to change.
As I understand it, Senator Scogin's bill dealing with resorts, there were some changes to that. Those are not reflected in here right now.
Okay.
And I don't know if anybody has those changes. I don't have them. I also know Senator Scogin's other bill on the Oversight Committee. There were some changes in that, but I don't know if you want to pick those up or not. I guess that's up to you, Mr. Chairman.
When you're getting across it.
We don't have those versions now. We'll look to, I mean, if they're state and local government specific, we'll have to make those changes.
But Mr. Chairman, those can be picked up on the floor. Like I said, we have not had a chance to. They were meeting late last night and have not had a chance to incorporate those.
Is everyone tracking?
Yes.
If that's it, we can move discussion to the A1 amendment. I think Senator Dibble had his hand up first.
Nope.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
Just a clarification. I was looking to see if the language had been added for the amendment yesterday on the remote.
Yes.
I found it. Is. Did you find it?
I found mine, too.
I could not find it. So
it's page, it's page 24.
Thank you.
So that's in there. Senator Stump.
Are we now? We're talking about the new amendment, the A1 amendment.
The A1, correct.
And are you taking amendments?
We are.
I have several that I'll bring up. All of them relate to the wetlands.
Okay.
And I want to go back to the Senator Olson's. The discussion on the rulemaking first.
What page?
66.
66.
And I know we had quite a lengthy discussion about that before, and I think the division actually took that out in your original bill, that rulemaking, because the analysis was, or the discussion was that the board already has the rulemaking authority to do it, and but there is a provision that could be kept, and that's the relating to the wetlands replacement and banking provisions, which is on line 26. So my suggestion would be to keep the first keep lines 22, 23, 24 up to statutes. And then delete the period, and then strike the language, the rest of the language on 24, 25, and on the first part on 26, before the first and then keep that remaining sentence up to the first period on line 27. And I realize that's maybe a little more involved. I don't have that amendment written out, but then we could strike the rest of the language of 27 through 32. And what that does is it keeps the board has existing authority in rules, and the discussion in division when we actually took it out was it centered around whether they would go beyond the statute and then do the interpretation. And I think it was, the at least at that time, the division's consensus, or at least the majority, that they should stay with the statute and not be making, changes that we didn't, that don't reflect the statute.
Senator Stump, that's certainly my recollection of the discussion. I just don't understand what you're referring to with the division. Which division?
The committee.
Are you talking about this committee?
Committee. Oh,
okay.
Your bill.
Okay.
When it was first.
All right. So when this committee considered the bill earlier,
yep.
That was the discussion. Okay, correct.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, to that point, when you refer to the wetland replacement and banking provisions, are you referring to changes that are made here to be incorporated?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then I would say the language that I was talking about, I would still like to have it say, and the relevant statutory changes to the wetland replacement and banking provisions. To be specific, it's because you're to incorporate the rule changes enacted to the relevant wetland. You're saying just to they would incorporate all changes that are in here, but you wanted to spell that one out specifically.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, no. If we didn't, I think some of the new language in here relates to changes in the wetland replacement and banking provisions.
In just that.
And so we would want them to also include that in their authority. But
Senator Stumpf, I think council is tracking with what you're saying and has a suggestion.
Well, Mr. Chair, you want the the line 25, the relevant wetland exemption provisions, you want that out so that it just...
Mr. Chairman and Senate Counsel, actually on line 24 after statutes, mm-hmm. delete the period.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of the line.
Yeah.
And then strike the language mm-hmm. on the rest of the language on 24, 25, and the 284.0210, and then keep the language in the wetland replacement and banking provisions in Minnesota rules stated there, and then that would be, I believe, all we need.
So it would say to incorporate into the rules changes enacted in Minnesota statutes, comma, and the wetland replacement and banking provisions in Minnesota rules, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And then you could delete the rest of the language.
And, Mr. Chair, I think
I still want statutory changes right. to the wetland replacement and banking provisions.
And so, Mr. Chair, on line 24, and correct me if I'm not tracking with you, after rules, you would put the relevant statutory changes is there. So the line would read to incorporate into the rules the relevant statutory changes enacted Minnesota statutes. Is that?
Well,
Mr. Chairman, can I just
Mr. Knopf
here? I think what Senator Stumpf is trying to do is to allow them to go beyond the statutory changes for the banking provisions. As I understand it, that the board wanted to go beyond the statutory changes. There is some interpretation, and there are some changes that they'd like to make in the banking to go along with the banking changes in here. And what Senator Stumpf would like to do would just be allow them just for that limited piece, that everything else would be related to the statutory changes except for the part on the banking provisions.
Okay. And Mr. Knopf or Ms. Baker, what would be the effect of deleting the rest of the language beginning with these rules on line 27?
Mr. Chair, well, they do have that. Mr. Senator Stump's correct. We don't have to tell them this.
Okay.
And they know that these rules are only going to be effective for two years unless they're replaced quickly.
All right.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, that is what you want to do. You
right.
want them to go beyond the statutory changes. Okay, thank you. Sorry, I'll withdraw that.
Okay, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, to Ms. Baker and Mr. Knopf, Aren't they going to be making the changes to 8420.0115 and to 8420.0210? So if that's the case, why would we delete them if that's what they're going to be?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind if I answer that, that you don't need to mention that because they can do that based on this. That part would be to incorporate the rule changes enacted in Minnesota statutes, so incorporate into the rules. So that would be part of, but they can't go beyond just including them. They would have to include without interpretation, basically as it was passed by the legislature.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferguson, it's not clear to me then what we gain or accomplish by deleting those. If those are the rules that they're going to be changing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and maybe Mr. Knopf can recollect too, in the discussion we had in the division, the board currently has the authority to go ahead and do what needs to be done to reflect the statutory changes. The discussion then centered around is, well, how far beyond the statutory changes can you go? And that's what I'm trying to narrow it down, so that we do recognize the wetland replacement and the banking provisions, but not going beyond that. If that makes sense,
Senator Mr. Chairman,
are there changes to the rules beyond the wetland replacement and banking provisions? The way this worded, I think there are. But I'm just trying to understand what your amendment would do, because I don't think it makes much of a change.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, it does say and the wetland replacement and banking provisions. So it's basically to incorporate into the rules changes enacted in the Minnesota statute. So any changes that are done in the statutes are included. Plus, they can make changes to the wetland replacement and banking provisions in those rules. They can go beyond the statutory changes.
Right, Mr. Chairman, I understand that. It's what I'm struggling to understand is why we would delete the Minnesota rules referenced before that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, those are references to the exemption provisions. Right. What Senator Stumpf is saying, he doesn't want them to go beyond the statutory changes for the exemptions.
But allowed to go beyond for banking and replacement.
Exactly.
Okay. Does everyone understand? Is that your motion, Senator Stumpf?
That would be. Okay. I apologize. I didn't have that written out.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
Senator Stumpf, did you also want that these rules are exempt from the rulemaking provisions?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Knopf, no, I struck the remaining language through line 32.
Because I think that you need to give them some provision on the exemption to do the wetland replacement and banking provisions. Otherwise, it will take the full process.
Oh, okay.
For that part. I guess that's up to you on how you want to do that. That's what I thought you were going to try to give them, is this quicker process to do the replacement and banking provisions.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Knopf, I thought that was picked up under their current authority.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, no. Not necessarily, because that you need to provide some sort of exemption in here from the process for these rules. And this actually, 1436386 is a little faster than what they have under current law to pick up statutory changes. So my thought is that if you want them to do the wetland replacement and banking provisions quickly, you would need to still provide that exemption.
Okay. Yeah, I don't mind that.
So then, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sumpf, your amendment would just be on 66.24, delete everything after statutes, delete 66.25, and on 66.26, delete everything before the first comma, and then otherwise leave it intact.
All right.
All right. Does everyone understand that? So all those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Further discussion. Senator Saxon.
Mr. Chair, the E4 amendment.
Does everyone have the amendment? Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This deals with shoreland rulemaking, and the last part of my amendment, which deletes line 4 through 7, basically deals with the discussion we had earlier in the week about the fact that the Shoreline Standards Update Advisory Committee dealt with five counties in north and north central Minnesota that did a terrific job on a voluntary basis putting together some rules, but generally the northern portion of those counties are heavy in public land and not so heavy in development, and as we know, Crow Wing and Hubbard counties, lower Cass, are very well developed and have very little public land. So I think some type of initiation of rulemaking is important, I just soon not be quite so specific as to what we might use as recommendations. The other part of the amendment, changing January 15th, 2008, and line 1 to July 1st, really deals with time. I just don't think if we're going to initiate a serious rulemaking initiative I think we do need to give the DNR at least a year to initiate. And finally, if we're going to be as aggressive as putting an end to it, and as you see, I delete the final rules. I think we have to appropriate some money. I mean, this is what we're talking about doing here is not an inexpensive thing. It's important, but it's not inexpensive. And I think that we have to deal with that, too. So I'd like to see us initiate it, but I'd like to certainly deal with the appropriation more directly. And as I see, I think time is a factor.
Senator Saxog, referencing the discussion and the testimony we heard on this shoreland issue, towards the end of the hearing, we had the DNR come up and answer a few questions regarding this. One of the answers to the questions was the DNR agrees that new rules need to be instituted regarding shoreland. You recall that as well?
I do.
We need new rules. And the other piece of testimony given by the DNR is that they are discussing initiating rules. So when the department itself says that we need new rules and they are going to be beginning new rules, and they themselves have established as a rational basis the alternative shoreline standards, it just only seems logical that if they haven't started them already, we should should urge them to do so. And I think your amendment does do that. But I don't know why they need a year. I wouldn't tell them to start it July 1st, because I think you really do need to have a stakeholder process before you initiate rules, even before you initiate rules. But I think January 15th is, was that 9 months? That's a pretty good amount of time for them to start initiating rules. Particularly rules that they say that they're going to begin on. So the money then, the money argument comes into question. If they are going to be beginning rules, they have not had a request for funding for shoreland rulemaking this biennium, they must have the money to do it. I don't see how you can draw any other conclusion.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just do not make that assumption that they do have that money. I mean, I have many other things that I'm concerned about in having the DNR do, and if we aren't appropriating money to do this, I think we're going to end up robbing Peter to pay Paul, as we often do. So I think it's important that we address that, and in terms of the initiation, I think a year would be better. If I would change one part of my amendment, it probably would be. Then I could leave it at January 15th. But I'm really concerned about. Putting too much into law here without having any money to actually make it happen.
Okay. And you're concerned about being too prescriptive on the types of rules that they apply?
Well, I am, Mr. Chair.
With regards to the alternative shoreline.
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. Do you want to... Do you want to withdraw or divide your amendment and withdraw line 3, and then we can then just vote on line 4?
What I would do, Mr. Chair, is I would withdraw one point, the change that I made in 1.3. I'd leave it at January 15th instead of July 1st.
Yeah, okay. All right. Is that okay?
And I would,
can you just withdraw?
And I would take that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. All right. So then we're just voting on line 4 and 5 of the A4. And 6. So this would take out a required end date for the rulemaking, and then take out the suggestion that they should use the alternative shoreline management standards.
That's correct,
as a basis,
Mr. Chair,
for their rulemaking. Okay, does everyone understand that? Mm-hmm. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My reaction is that whether this goes on or not probably won't make a huge difference unless someone disagrees, because it seems pretty clear that there's been some fairly extensive scientific inquiry and a great deal of consultation in developing the alternative shoreland standards. And so it's hard to imagine that there will be a sea change in the science or the sentiment in the near term. I would be inclined to not support the amendment, because I think, it's good work, and it's good for us to give them direction to build on the work that they've already done. But I'm guessing that that'll happen regardless.
Okay, further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
I'd like to go back to the wetlands. I know we had this discussion a little bit yesterday. But my amendment would take out section 5
What page are you on?
Page 60.
Page 60, I think.
I'm looking off the right document.
It relates to the de minimis. And let me give you my rationale for it. And I know maybe I got a little heated yesterday, but I do remember very vividly the discussions we had as we put all this together. And the purpose of the de minimis, it was like a release valve. And it was a release valve for a lot of little tiny areas, such as driveways. People had, in fact, the bishop of Crookston Diocese got caught in this. He had a little low spot in his backyard. So the de minimis was not meant to encroach or ruin a lot of wetlands, and it hasn't. This provision right now affects about, you know, maybe 15 to 23 acres a year. So it's not a big item. But yet it's an important one from the citizen's perspective, because if you don't allow some of those little, you know, like I say, low spot that you could deal with, then they're going to end up being kind of a thorn in their sides, that local unit of government has to go out there, they have to enforce it, and the citizens get fairly anxious about their inability to take care of that little depression, whether it's a driveway or whether it's in their yard or whatever. And the other thing is that when we make this change, and I know it's not probably, I know you kept some of the de minimis exemptions, I mean some of the small amounts, like up to 20 square feet, but 20 square feet is maybe about less than this table. That means that the local units of government are going to incur a fairly significant cost too, because they're going to have to go out, and that means more permits, and it means more explaining. And eventually it does come back and rest in our laps who have to deal with it. So I think that the emphasis on retaining wetlands is good, and we should do it, and replacing them. But we do have to have a little bit of flexibility. And that was the purpose of the de minimis. And I feel that, and I still feel very strongly about that, that this is not an unusual or an excessive amount to allow, you know, as a little flexibility out there for the public. So I would offer to take that section out, and I think we'll have a lot less grief if this moves forward and becomes law.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this, you know, we saw these de minimis exemptions come forward as a subject of a great deal of discussion. I think Bowser and others, first of all, you know, de minimis exemptions don't apply to the areas of the state where, you know, the northern part, I have the little map here, you know, that are 80% or greater wetlands. So we're talking about the area of the state where they've suffered significant loss of wetlands, and the size of the de minimis exemption is one of those factors that is strongly is responsible for the kind of wetland loss. You've seen this whole subject extensively examined and debated by the governor's Clean Water Cabinet, Bowser, a whole bunch of others, and they've told us that it's, you know, it's the size of the de minimis exemption that has made one of the largest contributions to the loss of wetlands, which I think we all agree is something we're trying to to stop. So, you know, to not address that, I think, doesn't address one of the remaining items in this whole initiative that will actually stop loss of wetlands. So, you know, it's not eliminating the de minimis, it's just varying the size down a little bit in a couple of specific cases.
Mr. Chairman, let me try to explain how it works. In identifying a wetlands, we're not talking about necessarily water. A lot of people think when we talk about wetlands, we're talking about water. We're talking about a type of grass that might grow in a low spot, an area that might get wet when it's really wet. And that's the irritation that people cannot understand, that just because they have a certain type of grass growing in a low area, that's a wetland. Tell the Archbishop of Crookston, go talk to him if you think that.
Archbishop.
I mean, it is the whole purpose of the de minimis was a release valve. It was to take care of those little driveway issues or those little backyard issues or. And I've gone out to many of them, and I just think that you know, you can make the changes, but believe me, those of us in areas that, and you're right, the 80% plus counties are not involved. But when you look at the rest of that northwestern part of the state, and we had the same issue with drain fields, it was all wet. It was Lake Agassiz. I mean, we had one-third of the state was underwater at one point, and so the water table is quite high. So any part of that whole area up there could become a wetland, or you know, you could grow that type of grass in any part of that country. So I offer that amendment to.
Well, Senator Dibble and then Senator Dill. Mr. Chair, I think Senator Stump mischaracterizes what we're talking about. Sure, you know, some wetlands aren't wet all the time, at least not visibly wet, but they have a high water table, they have unique ecological characteristics, and they have a significant role to play in water quality and the ability of wildlife and other things to thrive. And so there's well-founded reasons for taking a look at those and understanding that we're not talking about open standing water all the time, but that doesn't diminish their importance. They're not just, you know, little low-lying swampy areas with a certain kind of grass that I think mischaracterizes and minimizes the role and the importance of these unique areas in the overall picture of our environment.
And I think there's always been a willingness to approach these kind of common sense issues, like someone's driveway, for example, not having to replace a low grassy area to replace your driveway. I think there's always been a willingness to approach some of these, consider some of these common sense issues and make sure that they don't really overburden people in bureaucracy. But remember, the de minimis in the statute refers to all types, many types of wetlands, four types of wetlands, not just one type of low grassy area that might get wet once in a while. We're talking about type 1, 2, and 6, and 7. So I think when we're talking about these common sense situations that you bring up, Senator Stump, we need to make sure that we don't lump that in with more serious matters of wetland loss. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'm going to support Senator Stump's motion. And I just want people here to understand that I was a co-author of this 1991 Wetland Conservation Act in 1991 and spent a lot of time in conference committees. And throughout the decade of the 90s, we were trying to tinker with this thing and fix it and change it and so forth to try to make it work better, very controversial. Well, last night I spent a good bit of time, at least a couple hours, on this bill trying to figure out what this section really means. And I was very unhappy with the choice of words of whoever drafted this. I find this to be a very confusing section right here. Now, the way the current law is, it's very easy to understand. If you just take a look at the shoreland wetland protection zone, just that part of the real estate around these wetlands or a lake, it's very simple under current law. It's 400 square feet for all types of wetlands. There's eight types of wetlands, and it's very simple. It's 400 square feet for all types. And then when you get beyond the shoreland protection zone, the amount of de minimis varies depending on type of wetlands. But generally for types 3, 4, 5, and 8, and we're talking about cattail marshes now for the most part, it's 400 square feet for those type of marshes across the state. But then when you get into these very shallow depressions, the types 1s and 2s, and the type 2s have got canary grass probably growing in them. You get to type 3, you're getting into the cattail marshes. But those 1, 2s, and 6s, that's where the number varies from different parts of the state. And Senator Dibble had the map there, the 80%, over 80% counties, the counties that have over 80% of their wetlands still in place. They have a 10,000 square foot de minimis, and we're not changing that. This bill doesn't change that at all. Then you got the 50 to 80% counties, which is that narrow band between the northern counties and the southwestern counties, where you've got a de minimis, which is being modified in this bill, going from 5,000 to 2,500 square feet for wetland types 1, 2, 6, and 7. And those are the shallow depressions that may or may not have water in them all year long, and especially the type 1s only have water in them probably for a week or two in the spring. At any rate, when you get down to the part of the bill that Senator Stump is zeroing in on, the changes that are being proposed, I find very hard to catch the way these words are used. And we've had discussions with various people outside this room just this morning. I have another version that just showed up here that could be used for this section of law that would clarify things to make it more easy to understand. But here's what I think it says and what the intent was. In this shoreland wetland protection zone, what current law is 400 square feet exemption for all types of wetlands. We're going to take and divide that, and we're going to say the types 1, 2, 6s, and 7s, which are the shallow depressions, slightly wet during part of the year, we're not going to change that. That's still going to be 400 square feet. But then when we get into the wetter wetlands, the types 3, 4s, 5s, and 8s, the proposal, I believe the proposal is to cut that down to 100 square feet. The way I read it, that would apply all over the state of Minnesota. It's just confusing to the point where I think Senator Stump has got a good idea. Let's delete this section and try to maybe work on better language later. Actually, the way I think it reads here and the way I interpreted it last night is that there's some parts of the state where I think the intention was to go to 400 from 400 square feet to 100 square feet on these shallow depression wetlands all over the state. But the way I read the bill, it looks like we're going from 400 square feet down to 20 square feet in some parts of the state. And it's confusing to the point where I think it's probably appropriate to at least eliminate it for this point in time and try to figure out a simpler way to do this. Now, what I think the intent is, and what I think most people maybe would agree with, is in the shoreland protection zone, the wetland protection zone, okay, we'll stay at 400 square feet the way it is right now for the shallow depressions, the type 1, 2, 6s, and 7s. We'll go to 100 square feet for 3, 4s, 5s, and 8s. And that should be very simple to write down in a simple two-sentence section. And get rid of all this razzmatazz about the building setback zone, whether it's inside or outside, beyond, and this and that and so on. And, boy, it's hard to figure it all out. So let's support Senator Stump.
Senator Dill, you're talking about paragraph 5 and 6 on page 61.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was talking about paragraph 5, which I think is what Senator Stump is talking about, but paragraph 6 is also problematic because what I was told outside, what the intent was, is that it says 20 square feet of wetlands regardless of type or location on page 61, line 61.11. But then I was told out in the hall that what the larger number always applies. So if it says 100 feet, 400 square feet or 1,000 or whatever it is, the larger number always applies. And I don't think 20 square feet applies anywhere in the state of Minnesota, the way the lingo is here. But then if you eliminate, I don't know, what do you do with all that stuff underneath number 6?
Yeah.
Maybe that number 6, maybe 5 and 6 should be eliminated for right now, just for the time being anyway, until we get some simpler language.
Yeah. You know, Senator Dill, I think you make some very valid points. You're probably right that at least paragraph 5 and 6 should be deleted in favor of some simpler language later on. Senator Stump's motion, however, is to delete the entire
section
part. So there are three other paragraphs that are not confusing at all.
Oh, I see.
They would also eliminate. So what I would say is, I would say let's go to your concern, because I think they're very valid, in my opinion, and take out those parts that are confusing. But I think the point of the entire de minimis portion of this bill goes to a lot of different issues that have been raised over the Wetlands Conservation Act. WACA was enacted in 1991. And that was a very difficult process from what I've been told from the folks who remember that. But since 1991, we've had a chance to not only put the Wetland Conservation Act into effect, we've also had a chance to figure out its benefits and its pitfalls. And over the years, we've been able to base our discussion on practical experiences. It's not as hard now that we have real practice and real history with WACA behind us. And one of the things that Governor Pawlenty's agency, the Board of Soil and Water Resources, has determined is that the de minimis exemption appears to be the exemption that's most contributing to continued wetland loss under the Act. And so that's why we're taking a closer look at the de minimis exemption. I can't agree more. We need to have de minimis because there are these common sense situations where you shouldn't have to go through a whole rigmarole when you just want to put in a driveway and there's some low grassland and the local person says that it's a wetland. We shouldn't have to go through all that. But remember, the de minimis exception is not an exemption from being able to drain a wetland. This doesn't say you can't drain a wetland. De minimis doesn't do that. This is just a de minimis standard for where you have to begin replacing a wetland. And that doesn't mean someone putting in a driveway or staking in a sign somewhere on their shoreland is going to have to go through that rigmarole. But 5,000 square feet is a pretty big area. It's a pretty big area. That's, let's just say, a 200 by 200 foot wetland. That's 4,000 square feet. So it's only slightly larger than a 200 by 200 foot area of a wetland. And we're just saying that maybe we should just ratchet that down to 2,500 square feet instead of 5,000 square feet. I'll get to you in a second, Senator.
Yeah,
So that, to me, seems reasonable, keeping in mind that you don't, you still can drain that area. In fact, I'm hard-pressed to find areas in the entire wetland bill where it prohibits anyone from draining the wetland. This is not about preventing people from draining wetlands. It's about how we replace the wetlands we drain. And we've learned over the course of this session and a whole stakeholder process beforehand that we continue to have a net loss of our wetlands. And we had this whole discussion, we had this whole debate in previous hearings, we vetted this out, so I'm just kind of repeating. And that we need, and that the Wetland Conservation Act was meant to prevent a net loss of wetlands. We say, okay, you can drain a wetland, but we're just going to make sure that they're replaced somewhere else. That's what the Wetland Conservation Act says. And there was a whole stakeholder process, and this bill has largely been approved by the governor's Clean Water Cabinet. And so these changes are not coming out of the blue. They're coming out of areas or from stakeholders that recognize the importance of these changes. But we are not unsympathetic, nonetheless, to those counties that feel that, well, this is going to be an additional enforcement. We have $500,000 to counties in our one-time appropriation bill to give counties the ability to enforce these rules better. In fact, the House has $1 million. So we've really worked hard on making sure that all of the pieces of this bill fit. We even had portions of it that benefit agriculture, and we've got I've got a Senate file on later this later on the agenda where we can have the Agriculture Committee review those agriculture exemptions. But it's taken a long time to achieve a balance. People have given, people have taken. We have the de minimis exemption, but we don't get into those 80% or more areas of the state. We also have a provision in here for the Northeast Minnesota management plan. That's something that's not cherished by environmentalists, but this is all a part of an accommodation of stakeholders who are all impacted by it. It's not about environmental movement. This is not about an agricultural movement. It's not about a developer's movement. This affects all of us, and we've all got to be a part of it, and we all have. We all have, and this is what we've come up with. We got a letter from the Association of Minnesota Counties that supports every provision of this bill except the de minimis. So I think that goes a long way to show how much work has been put into this. So, there might be a group or two that disagree with this, but it is an important change. Take a look at my own county, Anoka County, and we heard from had a hearing on the city of Columbus that was experiencing a great deal of growth. This is the whole area of northern Anoka County where you've got Carlos Avery, this huge wildlife management area, and two more wildlife management areas, one of which was the first place I ever hunted. Now there's commercial retail planned for right next to that wildlife management area, and a horse harness track, and all sorts of light industry, and more commercial development and more residential development. They're going to build $1 million home right next to Carlos Avery. This was their testimony. And So we have to think about what how we're going to balance all of the things that we treasure in Minnesota, particularly our water, and how we're going to balance that against the need for growth, the need for development, the need for economic our economic engine. And the way we do that is by saying, okay, drain the wetland, but replace it. And with the growth in population, the growth of development that we've seen in the last 10 years, probably growth that the 1991 WACA Act never anticipated, now we have, I think we have that type of growth that we need to go back and say, whoa, we need to be doing a better job of making sure we don't lose our wetlands. And this isn't a touchy-feely thing. You know, oh, these are, you know, beautiful butterflies that we need to protect because I find them precious. Wetlands are a critical part of Minnesota's ecology. And we need them for our economic engine as well. When we have flooding, it's oftentimes because we've lost our wetlands, and the water just flows over the flat ground, and they're not absorbed by any of our previous natural processes. And we need wetlands because they filter all of the types of nutrients and other types of discharge that man has put into our water and our ground. So there's a real critical reason why we need to be looking closely at these wetlands. Now, and there's been a huge stakeholder process to make sure that we've come up with the right types of solutions, and we continue to do that. People were concerned about the agricultural exemptions. We set those aside. People were concerned about the penalty portions. Actually, they were concerned about the first penalty portion. We set that aside. They were concerned about the second penalty portion. We put that aside. Because we were listening to what all stakeholders have to say. And I think we've done a pretty good job of weaving a tapestry for this proposal that has brought together those stakeholders. And I think it should be left intact. I'm sorry, who had their hand up? Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This map that Senator Dibble has shown us is confusing me because, and I hope it's correct, but other maps that I've seen have said the 50 to 80 area would include the Lake of the Woods in Crow Wing County. And I'm just wondering if I could get some type of verification of indeed which are the true in excess of 80% pre-settlement.
This is an important point of discussion. Why don't we have Bowser come up and answer some questions about the map.
Mr. Chairman, John Jasky, Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources. Chairman, Senator Saxog, the map that you referred to, I believe, is this one. It indicates that the counties in the northeastern part of the state generally, those are the counties that have greater than 80% of their original wetlands remaining.
And Mr. Chair, as far as you know, this is entirely accurate. I mean, so the other maps that I've seen that might say that, say, Lake of the Woods County is 50 to 80 is not correct.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Saxog, I haven't seen that map, but it doesn't seem correct. This is the provision that is already in the statute identifying these counties based on University of Minnesota study back in the 1980s.
Right, thank you. I have one other question or one other comment, and I appreciate the fact that we had the discussion earlier about the net loss in wetlands. I didn't necessarily, Mr. Chair, reach the same conclusion that we had a net loss. I think there's some real question as to whether we're counting our our gains and losses in wetlands correctly. And, you know, that's what continues to bother me in this whole situation. I think we're doing a lot better than some people would have us believe.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, before 1991, there was a state representative named Marcus Marsh who introduced a bill with a couple sentences in it. And basically it said it shall be the goal or the policy of the state of Minnesota to have a no-net loss of wetlands. That's about all it said. And that's, there was no indication at that point in time or through this 1991 wetland bill that got passed that we're going to talk about only the regulatory program as being responsible for achieving a no-net loss policy. I never even heard about this thing until this year. I maybe should have noticed it last year, but when MCEA prepared this report right here, this 2006 wetland report, they decided that the wetland policy, no-net loss policy, applied only to the regulatory program, and that was it. And I looked this report over very carefully, and they make the point that isn't this terrible? During this three-year period, we lost 1,300 acres of wetlands based on the regulatory program only, 1,367 acres between 2001 and 2003. And nowhere in this report, except in this one footnote right here that I got marked in yellow, it's the only sentence in this whole report that suggests that there might even be some other things we need to think about, like all the wetland restoration programs and all the federal and state and Ducks Unlimited and Pheasant Forever programs and all these wetlands that are being restored in other parts of government and the private sector. That's the only sentence that I can find in this whole report. The whole report basically is focusing on how terrible we're doing on wetland conservation in this state. Now, I just passed this out. This came from me. I didn't put my name on. I guess I probably should have, but it's for the Department of Agriculture. And if you look on it, on the chart on the top of the one page, there's a chart there that suggests we may have actually gained 600,000 acres of wetlands if you count all these various programs over the last decade or so. And most people that are in the business actually tell me they think we're gaining about 40,000 acres a year. We're not losing 1,500 like this report says. So one amendment I had today, which I'm not going to offer because it's not quite ready, is this idea of clarifying that the no-net loss policy does not apply only to the regulatory program. It applies to all programs across the state. And when it does, Senator Saxhaug is right. We're doing well in terms of wetland restorations. And this, I'll get back to Senator Stump's amendment. I didn't realize you were taking out all of Section 5. I thought it was just this other part also not listed in Number 5. But nevertheless, this regulatory issue to save a few more square feet of wetlands here and there does cost a lot of money in terms of regulation and heartache and pain and suffering and so forth. And based on what I've been told, we're probably going to this change in de minimis is probably going to get us another 20, 30 acres or thereabouts. Some people say 23 acres. We don't know of extra wetlands per year that we're going to save. And then we're going to stick an extra $500,000 a year or $250,000 a year into this regulatory program to help people regulate it for a gain of 20, 30 acres a year. So the cost-benefit relationship is kind of questionable. But I would like to compliment our chairman. You gave a wonderful speech on why we need wetlands, and I agree with you completely. We need more wetlands. They do a lot of good. And the way I look at it, we should concentrate on restoring those wetlands where we really need them to interrupt the water coming through the ditch systems and the creeks and so forth before it gets into our lakes and our streams. There's a lot of places where we need more wetlands. The Minnesota River Valley is a place where we need a lot of wetland restored, and the CREP program has helped do that. And they do a lot of good out there. But on the regulatory side, the gains are pretty minimal. The losses attributed to the regulatory program is around 1,300 acres in a three-year period. But that's probably has to be balanced against the 40 or 50,000 acres we've gained a year over the last decade or so on wetlands in this state.
Another view of the cost benefit is how much money do we spend a year as a state on these wetland restoration programs? Tens of millions. I mean, we have a provision in our bonding bill just this year for $10 million for wetland replacement matching dollars, and that's going to match another 15 from the federal government. So $30 million for wetland restoration. So I think the question is, why do we lose them in the first place? Why don't we have some guidelines in place where we don't lose as many in the first place, so we don't have to spend as much restoring them? I agree, we ought to do this restoration, and I think the point is fair that we should certainly have an accurate count of the wetlands we are restoring outside of the Wetland Conservation Act. But remember, the Wetland Conservation Act is for counting for replacing wetlands that are taken away for one reason or another. So we need to have an accurate count of that. And actually, we don't even have even with the numbers that show a net loss of wetlands, we still don't have an accurate account of all the wetlands that are lost under the exemptions for which there are no notices. So, I agree. I whenever you're ready to offer your amendment, Senator Dill, on counting, having a better count of the wetlands we restore, I'm for it. Whether it's within or without the parameters of WACA, I think we have to do that. I think we have to take a look at how much money we're spending on replacing wetlands. Senator Stumpf, you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to get back to my amendment. Just want to inject just a little bit of realism. When the Wetlands Conservation Act was first passed, it did not have a de minimis, if I remember correctly. And about two or so years later, the reason for the de minimis was the exact reason why I think we need to keep it, is that we've got, 4.5 million plus people around the state that do not know, a lot of them, they have lives too. And what this was meant for was a response to what happened after the Wetlands Act was passed and the feedback started coming in. Calls started coming in. And so then we put that in place. The de minimis, if you look at that section 5, 10,000 square feet is 100 by 100. That's the original law. 5,000 square feet is 70 by 70. And you have to envision what that amount is. 2,000 square feet is 31 feet by 31 feet. That's, this table is probably 30 feet long. So we're not talking about huge, areas. We're talking about de minimis, small areas. Even 100 by 100 square feet, if you're talking about a driveway or if you're talking about a low spot, is not a huge area.
My numbers were incorrect when I was talking about the 200 by. So thank you for.
I just so happen to have a calculator in my pocket.
Senator Dibble.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know, 100 feet by 100 feet seems big to me. I think of my house and my city lot, maybe because I don't live in wide open areas, but I think
you know, my lot is 40 feet by 100 feet. You know, talking about an area larger than that, that seems kind of big to me.
We got to get you up in Northwestern.
Yeah.
Well, I think fair point, Senator Dibble, because remember, this does not apply to the vast expanses of agriculture that we have in greater Minnesota. That's covered by the federal exemption. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this applies to, really, the greater impact of this is on the areas that Senator Dibble refers to. These, the for lack of a better word, the suburban and exurban subdivisions. Those areas around...
Maybe you should amend it to a metro.
And those areas around Carlos Avery. And those are the examples of the primary benefit that we're going to see with this.
I wasn't quite done. You know, when I'm talking about, people might remember, Mr. Chair, when we were talking about this issue, I mentioned the flooding that occurred in Minneapolis in 1997. That was attributable to the fact that there was a time before which we really cogitated on the importance of wetlands, and so we filled them in. We first used them as dumps, and then we threw a bunch of fill, and we built a bunch of houses there because there was a lot of housing pressure in Minneapolis after World War II, and you know, they continued to be the low-lying areas. We continued to need them for the flooding purposes that you mentioned previously, and lo and behold, in 1 year we had a whole bunch of storms, and all the low-lying areas got flooded, and everyone was devastated, and the city was forced to reckon with that, buying out a lot of properties, restoring a lot of stormwater drainage ponds and low-lying wetlands area. Tens of millions of dollars, the state helped the city, but the city went to great expense and great effort, and it was really, really hard. So when you're talking about the cost-benefit analysis, I think that has to be factored in. The other thing we have to take into account to respond to Senator Dill is... we lost a lot of wetlands before we even started counting. And so you know, back when these wetland laws were first enacted. And so we have to reckon with that. That, you know, those lost wetlands, you know, when we drained everything and filled everything in and built over everything, they still matter. It still matters that they're gone. And so when we're factoring in our losses, there's a huge gap that's not even counted because we didn't go back in time. And to that point, Mr. Chair, I don't know if we have the time or if you're interested, but Bowser was able to defend its map. I'm wondering if we want MCEA to respond to the methodology they used in their report. I know they're willing to. I signaled to them. So
I think we've heard extensive testimony. There was a specific question on a piece of information that was distributed for the first time, and so I allowed that. But I'm not going to go into additional testimony. Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to draw the committee's attention to page 61. If you can get to page 61, lines 61.1 and 61.2. So if you get to page 61, we're talking about what the effect is in these over 80% counties, and you may note that there's a 10,000 foot exemption and so forth for types 1, 2, and 6, and 7 wetlands. But if you look up there on the top of the page, it says we're going to delete the 400 and we're going to 100 square feet of wetland types not listed in clauses 1 to 3. That means types 3, 4, 5, and 8, which is a cattail marshes outside of the building setback zone of the shoreline wetland protection zones in all counties. I just want to emphasize that word, all counties. This involves even the counties with over 80% of their wetlands left. If it's in the shoreline protection zone, we're dropping it from 400 square feet to 100 square feet. So I think there's been some discussion here a little bit today that some of the stuff that we're doing doesn't affect those counties up there that have lots of wetlands left, but this particular provision going down to 100 square feet, it does affect all counties, according to the way I read this. And since this whole issue is so darn confusing, as I mentioned earlier, when I was trying to figure it out last night, it kind of looked to me like it could be even in the counties less than 100, less than 50% counties. It kind of looked like those 3, 4, 5, and 8 wetlands, we were going down to 20 square feet, but the whole thing is very confusing in this section of law, or this proposed law, and I think no matter what happens to Senator Stump's amendment, I think we need to rewrite this so that it's, so ordinary people like myself can understand it.
I'd renew my motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, take out section 5.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a couple remarks about this. There seemed to be a sense that perhaps types 1 and 2 wetlands were not very important. There was some discussion about groundwater recharge, or some discussion about flood control, which certainly is true. They do have a value there. But there's also another value to them, and that is because early in the spring, they will, for a very short period of time, retain water. And when they are retaining water, they are teeming with invertebrates, very small invertebrates. And that's a very important part of the migration cycle for birds, particularly waterfowl. When waterfowl migrate, they lose a large percentage of their weight in that migration. And those small invertebrates that are in those temporary ponds are teeming with those invertebrates. And that's what the migratory waterfowl depend on to replenish their energy and their body weight so that they can lay a clutch of eggs and reproduce. And if you don't have those class types 1 and 2 and also other depressions that temporarily hold water that aren't even classified as wetlands, the migratory waterfowl are not going to stop in those areas. So I think types 1 and 2 are as important to our migratory waterfowls as the types 3, 4, and 5, and probably more important to preserve, because most Minnesotans can look at a type 3, 4, 5 and know that it's something that should be preserved. They hold water year-round. They have muskrat houses in them. They have rushes. They're a beautiful sight. You pretty much know, innately know, you shouldn't drain those. But you look at a class type 1 or 2, they typically don't hold water into the season. So I think it's important that we protect them, and I think it's important that we maintain this smaller de minimis.
Senator Dill, and then we should probably vote.
Senator Dill. I'd like to request a roll call vote on this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Roll call's been requested. Any further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, might I ask that the motion that be repeated?
Senator Parasol, the motion is to delete Section 5, beginning on page 60. Clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Senator Anderson?
No.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Dill?
Yes.
Senator Frederickson?
No.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Parasol?
Yes.
Senator Saxhog?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Sieben?
No.
Senator Scogin?
Yes.
Senator Stump?
Yes.
Senator Bickerman?
Yes.
9 yes.
There being 9 in favor and 5 against, the motion prevails, the amendment's adopted. Why don't we recess at this time, because we've got session at 11, and we will reconvene 15 minutes after session adjourns.
Mr. Chair, we can leave our stuff here.
The answer is yes, leave your stuff here. We're in recess.